And by the way, when you go to the Four Corners where Arizona, Utah, New Mexico, and Arizona come together, it's not really geographically correct. They moved it because the real spot's inconveniently up in a ravine.
More convenient parking lot where it is now.
Anyways,
check. Come on, you know, GPS.
Well, somebody did. In the modern era now with GPS, somebody did and went, hey, wait a minute.
Wait a minute. The things you used to be able to get away with, huh?
Yep. Well, Stan, it's a pleasure. We need to have you come back on, update us on things that people may want to know about in the travel world, because I know you have your ear to the ground and your antenna up.
Anytime. The pleasure, as always.
All right. You've been listening to Radio Parallax, and a really entertaining show. I'm so glad that we have it here at KZFR. My name is Chris. I'm filling in tonight on It's Your Body. And Radio Parallax is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Chapelle de l'Artiste, Chateau, and Retreat, a boutique bed and breakfast well-suited for intimate weddings, gatherings, and retreats. Located in the foothills of Paradise, Chapelle de l'Artiste offers a private setting with ponds, gardens, and fine lodging. More information is available by calling 228-0941 and by Grocery Outlet of Chico. Independent owners Chris Hostetler brings locally grown and produced items to the Grocery Outlet of Chico. You can find brand names in groceries, housewares, health and beauty products, including organic, fine wines, and more. Grocery Outlet of Chico is open 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. at 2157 Pillsbury Road in the Almond Orchard Center. Find them on Facebook and at groceryoutlet.com. And it's 6:02. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. But they will be mine, for sure. And I just wanted to thank another underwriter who is underwriting this particular program, It's Your Body, Butte Views and Beyond. We alternate with Butte Views and Beyond, and it's made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival events, including our Artoberfest, Chico Paleo, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn about Friends of the Arts, visit Friends of the Arts Upstate. org, and by Tres Hombres Long Bar and Grill, featuring the coastal Mexican cuisine reminiscent of Baja and the Yucatan, and flavors from all over Latin America. Tres Hombres offers over 120 premium tequilas. Choose from to enjoy your favorite margarita out there in their new outside patio or long bar. Tres Hombres is located on the corner of 1st and Broadway in downtown Chico and is open 7 days a week. And welcome to It's Your Body. It's Your Body this show was originally put on and is always put on by women's health specialists. Nine women founded Women's Health Specialists many, many years ago, originally as the Feminist Women's Health Center. The goal is to share health information with women and men. We believe that given all the options, we can make the best healthcare decisions for ourselves. By sharing stories and experiences, we can learn from each other, and we can revive health information passed on by our mothers, grandmothers, traditional healers, and friends. We don't promote or advocate any particular health choice. We are healthcare consumer advocates working in the clinic to assure women receive respectful health care. We are health educators working to ensure women get complete information about their choices. We are authors who have published 3 books. So we will be having a call-in part of this program. I'm hoping the topic today is home birth with a midwife. So if you would like to at 6:30 call in, I believe we will be able to do that. We'll have to see. We still have a kind of a question of about something, but I'll tell you about it in a minute. Anyway, the call-in number here is 895-1114, and that would be at 6:30. And you can address your questions about that. In the studio with me right now is Amber Yandy Marinescu. She went to nursing school 15 years ago and briefly worked on the Feather River Hospital maternity floor before she had her own three children. In the past 5 years, Amber has worked as a doula, providing labor support for women in the hospital, and has been the birth assistant for Dina Moe's home birth midwifery service. Now she is also a student midwife. And welcome to you, Amber.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, just a second. I neglected a little part of giving you the care you needed, which was to turn on your mic.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay. And I wanted to find out a little bit about you before we turn to the topic of midwifery, if that's okay.
Sure.
You told me before we started the program today that you were interested in being a midwife when you were a teenager.
That's right. Yeah, when I was an early teen, I just developed a passion for birth and wanted to attend births, and I would ask anyone I knew that was having a baby, can I come? I'll just stand in the back of the room. Would you let me be there? And my aunt allowed me to be there. And in high school, I did an ROP class and did a job shadow with two nurse midwives that were working in Chico at the time. And they let me job shadow with them, and I attended my first four births with them. And I was hooked from then on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what was that first birth like for you when you saw birth for the first time?
It was powerful. I saw, you know, three births in maybe 4 days, and it's hard for me to remember actually the first because all three are clumped together. They were all three so different. You know, one, a woman was absolutely quiet, just didn't make a peep, and we didn't even know the baby was coming out until the midwife lifted the sheet and said, I need a glove, and she reached in and caught the baby just in time.
Wow.
And the second one, the woman was screaming just at the top of her lungs and yelling at her husband, how could have you done this to me? And so that was really dramatic in a different way. And then the third was somewhere in the middle. So they were all three natural births, and that was kind of my first taste of how it could look differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you were in the hospital?
In the hospital, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
At Enloe.
And when did you first attend a home birth?
When did I first attend a home birth? That would have been 5 years ago was my first home birth with mm-hmm. Dina, and I was just shadowing at that time.
Mm-hmm. So you had seen quite a few births between the first three you saw and the home birth.
I had.
And what's the difference?
What's the difference? You know, really the setting. I mean, if you have a natural, unmedicated, uncomplicated birth in the hospital, you know, that the biggest difference between that and home birth would just be the place. And then beyond that, you know, there are many intricacies that are different. In the home, it's quiet and private and dark and intimate. And those are probably the main things that are difficult to achieve in the hospital, that quiet, dark, intimate setting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then also there's the whole issue, I think, of how prenatal care is delivered between well, probably midwives have different standards than obstetricians. Can you talk a little bit about what happens when a woman gets pregnant? Not necessarily how does she find her way to a midwife. We can talk about that. But what, you know, what's kind of the process in terms of going from deciding to carry the pregnancy to term and the actual birth?
The difference between the process is
Both as yourself as a mom mm-hmm. and also yourself as a midwife assistant.
Yeah. So the process for a mom, I mean, the difference between the process and seeing an OB and a midwife?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, the midwives tend to have more time or create more time and space for the woman prenatally. So where you might have a 15-minute visit with your OB, you'd have a full hour with your midwife. And, you know, out of that hour, the last 10 minutes would be, you know, the what we call the belly check, you know, measurement, listening to the baby, blood pressure, weight, And the other 45 minutes would be just talking and getting to know each other and developing a relationship and a relationship of trust. And I think that's probably the biggest piece missing when you see an obstetrician. Not that they're not capable of doing that. There's just not enough time, and or they don't make enough time. And you tend to, I think, miss out on that counseling piece and the relational piece.
And for you, did you have your babies at home?
I had my first two in the hospital with a nurse midwife, who was actually my midwifery professor at USF. And I had unmedicated and uncomplicated natural births. And with what I know now and my experience, I realize I got pretty lucky. I was very determined to have, you know, natural birth. But I was lucky. I didn't have complications. Everything was straightforward. And then with my third, I had met Dina about 2 years before I had her. And I just, at that point, I was just kind of hospital-minded. I was very natural-minded with birth, but I just didn't know that. I didn't really know about the home birth scene. I knew it happened. I knew my aunt had her babies at home out in Capay. Her husband caught the babies. I never really thought that there was a midwife there, and I'm not really clear if there was or not. But that was kind of my impression of home birth. And I met Dina, and she told me she was a certified nurse midwife, you know, graduate of Yale and doing home birth in Chico, and it about knocked my socks off. And I said, are you kidding me? I have to work with you. That's amazing. And so I got to know her and her practice, and had my third baby at home with Dina.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. So she actually helped deliver. Wow, that's great. Yeah. And, one of the things you also told me is that even though you went to nursing school, you decided not to become an RN because you had already midwifery in your mind. Why don't you want to be a nurse midwife?
Yeah, at first my choice not to get my license was not necessarily my choice. I just had babies right outside of nursing school, and it was my priority to stay at home with them. And then beyond that, when I started getting into midwifery with Dina and decided to go back to school, you know, I thought long and hard, even at that point, do I want to become a certified nurse midwife, or would I just, you know, would I go the LM route, the licensed midwife route? And it was really the complications that I'd seen Dina go through and my knowledge of the easier time that the licensed midwives that I know have. You know, their governing body, the California Medical Board, is just, I'm not going to say more lenient with them, but more understanding and more supportive. Mm-hmm. And so that was, and then, you know, I realized that, well, I could get my RN and become a CNM, and then I could lose my RN because the nursing board isn't as supportive of home birth midwives. So that's what ultimately led me to my decision to become a licensed midwife and to not get my registered nurse license.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, it's really too bad that things work that way, because nursing is a wonderful field, and it's too bad that also you will probably in your lifetime have less earning capacity because of your decision. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dina Mose has arrived, and I'm really appreciative that you're here again tonight on KZFR. I had the opportunity to interview you last night on The Real Issue, and we had more to talk about. And today, since I saw you last, you're on the front page of the News and Review, and I wanted to kind of get both of your reaction to the article, because we want people to read that and understand the issues too. What do you think?
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me back on the air.
Sure.
Boy, I'm really getting my 15 minutes of fame here.
Yeah.
I think it's a good article. I'm very happy with Evan's hard work. He worked really hard on this story. The picture on the front's even okay. I think I don't look too bad for an embattled midwife.
I think you look great.
Thanks. And so I'm very grateful to Evan and the News and Review team for doing such a fair and balanced look at the issues. There was really only one area that I felt, it's hard to cover such an in-depth issue in just a few page story. But if we want to talk about some issues, the issue of VBAC, which I talked about last night, VBAC is a vaginal birth after a cesarean section, and the issue of the ban on VBACs that the local hospitals have had over the past few years, for the past decade since I opened my home birth practice, is when VBACs were suddenly banned from the rural hospitals, which our hospitals in Butte County are included under that, since we're not a big tertiary care center, facilities here, any of the three county hospitals. The VBAC ban has been really impactful on women. And as I said last night, a problem in the United States of America with birthing women with maternity care is the 32 to 33% cesarean section rate. And as I talked about last night, that is a birth by major abdominal surgery. And there's a lot of health, emotional and physical implications of that on mothers and babies. And, part of the reason that percentage is so high is that VBACs were banned from local hospitals, from smaller hospitals, in the last 10 years, and which means that when a woman comes to her OB doctor for prenatal care, he tells her that a vaginal birth just isn't an option. And I feel like in the article, they didn't address that. There was a quote by the mother baby director Tracy Weber that, we would never strap a woman down and force her to have surgery. And that's absolutely true. On the other hand, women have to get prenatal care from the local OB docs, and it's in the setting of their monthly office visits during their pregnancy when they are told by their doctors that a VBAC isn't an option. Now, most women want to be good patients and not make trouble for their doctors and, try to do what's best for them. And it's a very rare woman who's willing to stand up to the doctor and say, well, why, doctor? And he says, mm-hmm. Well, it's against the rules at the hospital. And then, it's a rare woman who's going to fight that and demand a vaginal birth when she arrives at the hospital in labor. And so while there is that option to opt out of surgery, how many women actually do that in the hospital setting? It's very small.
Yeah, I would imagine. And you know what? I don't know. Maybe this is antiquated information, but it seems to me that if you have a number of cesareans, you're very much at risk. I know women who've been told, you shouldn't have any more babies because your abdominal wall is too weak, the muscles are, is that still correct?
Yes, there are a number of medical complications that result from a C-section, and doctors also tend to not really explain those to women. They just talk about the risks of a vaginal birth. But there's several significant risks of repeated cesarean sections, including, thinning of the uterine wall, scar tissue where the incision is made can lead to abnormal placental implantation, a condition called accretia, which is very dangerous, where often a woman has to have an emergency hysterectomy after the delivery of the child. That percentage of that complication is hugely exponential since the ban of VBACs and this concept of repeated cesarean sections for each child. In addition, blood loss, and of course any surgery has the complications with anesthesia. A woman can have a reaction that could even include death from anesthesia.
And also the anesthesia is not good for the fetus, right? Because there's less oxygenation.
Yeah, and less of the physiologic hormones of birth. And interesting about the baby, the fetus, and then the baby.
Oh, the baby, sorry.
Is that now research is coming out about microbiology and our friendly bacteria and how beneficial vaginal birth is to babies, because when they pass through the vaginal canal, they're actually colonized with all the friendly gut bacteria that we now know gives lifelong health of the immune system, you know, decreased diabetes and better digestive function. And there's now a huge list of knowledge we have about the microbiome. And there's actually a film out called Microbirth that looks at this particular issue of how important it is for the baby to get that vaginal flora during the birth.
Right. And I hadn't heard that before, but I believe it. It makes so much sense.
It's fascinating. If you ever thought, well, I wonder why the baby comes out from down there. Well, it's very useful to get that friendly bacteria. And probably over the next 5 to 10 years, it will be customary for C-section babies born in the hospital to get literally swabbed in the face by their mother's vaginal secretions.
Really?
Soon as possible after the birth, so that the C-section babies can take advantage of that flora.
That's amazing. You know, another thing that after surgery, it seems like it's much harder to start breastfeeding, and for the mom to get for the baby to get the colostrum, or that first nutrient-rich milk that the mother has, and
definitely
baby going on to sugar water and other things.
Well, in general, taking care of a newborn baby is very challenging, and doing so after having major abdominal surgery. I mean, I think it really takes weeks for C-section mothers to catch up to the vaginal birth counterparts of women, you know, recovering from a vaginal normal birth in terms of just being able to jump up and change a baby's diaper 10 times a day, or, you know, different positions for nursing. I mean, women after C-section, they need to hold their often a pillow or a blanket against their bellies if they laugh or cough or sneeze or try to pick up the baby. I mean,
yeah, for bonding even. That's really rough.
C-section moms are heroic.
Yeah. Do you want to say something, Amber? I don't want to leave you out of this because you're a big part of this team. I know you two work together closely.
Yeah. I just have something to add about the women that are advocating for themselves to have VBACs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they definitely are out there. We have VBAC support groups, you know, here in Chico. And women there's a bunch of women that are fighting for VBACs. And one of the things that I hear as a doula are discrepancies in women's stories of whether or not they're allowed to attempt it, whether or not the doctor will take them on as a client or say, no, we don't do that. You need to go down to Sacramento. And, you know, we'll hear that the same doctor will tell one woman, absolutely not, I don't do that. Or, no, you need to go to Sacramento. And then he'll tell the next woman, sure, you can try that.
Wow.
I'll support you in that. And then for those that they say, yes, we'll support you, there are always contingencies. You know, sure, you can have a VBAC, but you have to be in labor by 40 weeks. Well, majority of women have their babies between 40 and 42 weeks. So there's the added stress. So, you know, women think, great, I have a doctor that's supporting me. I'm going to do this. But they get to 40 weeks, or actually probably about 38 weeks, they start stressing about it.
Yeah.
And they're counting down to the days, to the, you know, their numbered days that they have the chance to attempt a VBAC. So
yeah, you're so vulnerable at the end of pregnancy. That's true.
I want to come back to this,
but you mentioned the word doula. Can you define that for people who don't know about what that is?
Sure. A doula is a non-medical person. It can be male or female. It's basically a person who supports a woman in labor, supports her emotionally and physically. And, you know, a doula can advocate for her client, but he or she is not to give medical advice.
Mm-hmm. And you help women after they deliver too, don't you? You help with the little things that are so important, like the house and the food and the other kids.
We meet with a woman before she gives birth. We are with her during her labor, and certainly check on her after. And, you know, there is another title, a postpartum doula. That's not to say a birth doula can't also be a postpartum doula, but that's some women are really trying to build their business and just doing care for after a woman goes home from the hospital.
So how would a woman find a doula who knew, you know, she knew she wanted help, how would she find somebody like you?
You know, I think the internet's probably the best way. That's okay. how most women find practitioners and doulas and everywhere. There's a Chico Doula Circle, which is a kind of a cooperative doula circle that's here in Chico, and there are several other women that have their own doula businesses, and I think pretty much every one of them is on Facebook or online. They can be found that way.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for your work,
sure.
too.
Sure.
You know, on the subject of a vaginal delivery after cesarean, women are so different. I mean, you know, some women are in great physical condition. They have youth and health for them. Other women are maybe not in good physical health. They're maybe older. They have health conditions. I mean, don't you have to be extremely selective?
Yes, especially in the home birth setting. We try hard to be selective. Although, you know, sometimes it's surprising who just pops that baby out and who has to work really hard. Sometimes it's not what we think. And sometimes a woman who hasn't exercised her whole pregnancy and has gained almost 50 pounds just has that baby, like, easy peasy. And then someone else who, you know, teaches dance or yoga and is in terrific shape will have to work really a lot harder than she ever imagined to have the baby. So, you know, there are specific medical risk factors that are contraindications to home birth. But besides that, I've really learned over the years to keep it open. I mean, older mothers can certainly have their babies, you know, at home and
have VBACs.
So we have to be careful what's a risk factor and what's kind of an assumption that we're making about a type of person or something. And so it's good to be very specific about that.
Right. And I think it would be devastating to really want a home birth and then just be, you know, have some kind of arbitrary, oh, I don't think you look healthy enough kind of rule.
Exactly.
It must
be hard. During the pregnancy, one of the benefits of the home birth midwifery model is that with hour-long prenatal visits throughout the pregnancy, we can change a lot of lifestyle habits. Mm-hmm. I've seen women, you know, really discover exercise and yoga and eating healthy diet, you know, really for the first time in their lives, sometimes while under my care during their pregnancy. And it turns them around. We watch women transform themselves. Mm-hmm. To me, that's one of the important qualifications of a home birth candidate, is a willingness to learn and change and transform and grow and evolve. And those are the families I really enjoy working with.
And that's, I think that's so important that you do spend that time with women, because I can remember when I was pregnant, except for a little group I was in where we did yoga together, I was not with pregnant women any of the time. It was just me out there being pregnant, not knowing what the heck I was doing most of the time. And it was kind of like, oh, I want to be part of, you know, but it wasn't there. But with an hour-long visit, boy, that would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really sweet.
And in your practice, you know, I don't want to talk about complications, but this is always what people want to know. They always are weighing things, you know, like what's the best? You know, I went on the ACOG, which is the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and read about what they said about home births. And they were actually not altogether negative. They actually gave some stats of things that go better in home births, but then they still had this negative slant. So how do we make decisions, you know, based on the health of the baby and the health of the mother? I'm totally for midwifery, but I'm trying to play the devil's advocate in terms of, you know, how do we bridge this gap between hospital obstetrical care and home birthing, seeing it birth as normal, birth as a something that can go horribly wrong and people can die.
Right. That's a fantastic question. And truthfully, the best model of care is a model of care in which there is a continuum from a home birth midwife to a highly skilled obstetrician and, you know, perinatologist, where there's collaboration and referral among all those different people. And that's the model in the UK, and that's the model in the Netherlands, where a quarter of women have their babies at home currently. But because the home birth midwives are accepted by the doctors as a part of the healthcare team, that communication means that there's easy facilitation when a woman needs to get transferred up into a more, high risk sort of setting, or brought down out of a high risk setting into a more, you know, normal low risk setting. And, you know, that's what the United States could really benefit from. Right now, the home birth midwives are kind of like our own community. And then, you know, it's just very hard to develop this communication with the doctors, because most of them are resistant to even acknowledging us as legitimate professionals. Well, that's a big obstacle to the best care possible. And Amber and I and some other women in the community, I think back in 2012, we created a little informal network. It's in the article, called the Chico Birth Network, with the specific goal of promoting better relationships between the home and the hospital, and that the article does talk about that. But we still have a ways to go, unfortunately, because certain individuals are still unwilling to communicate with us as legitimate professionals. And the last national Midwives Alliance of North America conference I went to, there were several sessions about just this issue, because as home birth has grown in the United States, this problem of communication between midwives and doctors is just popping up more and more across the nation. And there have been some really interesting studies done. I love, like, sociology studies and things, looking at, you know, what happens when a midwife brings in a patient and is treated with some hostility by the obstetrician, and, like, what's really going on there? You know, it's very complex, and everyone's not at their best in that moment, and when that's the only time they communicate with each other, you know, they're each coming from a different model of care, and they see the situation differently. For example, we've brought a woman in to the hospital that from our point of view was just a long labor, and in the home birth model, we don't count hours. Well, if you haven't had the baby in 8 hours of labor, you need to have a C-section.
Right.
That's a very old school obstetric approach. At home, if the mother is doing well, if she's eating and drinking and she's not exhausted and she wants to continue laboring and the baby's heart tones sound good and the amniotic fluid is clear and she's enjoying her birth process, we don't count the hours. But if after a long labor we bring a woman in for a little help to finish the birth, the doctors might be horrified that she's been in labor for so long.
Right.
So that's two different models. That's two different ways of looking at the same situation, bumping into each other in a heated moment. And so really, both sides need to learn more about each other.
Oh, God, that's a really good example. That's, you know, this kind of crisis model that isn't a crisis, and you're just kind of looking at each other from two different, totally different points of view. Wow. So in the studio with me tonight, I have Dina Mose, certified nurse midwife, on the cover of the News and Review this week. You'll want to read that article. And also Amber Iandi Marinescu, who works with Dina and is also herself a student midwife and doula. I want to be able to maybe take some calls if people want to. I'm not saying that it necessarily be a great idea, but we can do it. We can try to do it. 895-1114. Again, this show is called It's Your Body. My name is Chris. I'm just filling in tonight, and I'm so grateful that I'm able to interview Dina, because I got to interview her last night, too, and we hadn't talked about everything we wanted to. But I do want to repeat some of the things we talked about last night, because she is that exact thing that we just talked about, with that kind of misunderstanding that different worldviews. Unfortunately, the people with the power in this town are the hospital-based obstetricians, and I don't even think they're very supportive of midwifery in general, even if it's in the hospital setting. So that's why I think the midwives, there are no midwives in Chico who are hospital-based either. They have all gone to Feather River Hospital, so it's not just home birth midwifery. But Dina, you have a benefit coming up, and let's plug this benefit because I really want people to
sounds good
be able to support you.
Thank you. Yes, because I just found out today that I am going to be needing to pay the Board of Nursing $11,000 for their trouble of investigating the complaints that the doctors from Enloe put in for me. And yes, so we are having a fundraiser to support the legal defense of myself, and which also supports the existence of home birth midwifery in Chico and the excellent care of nurse midwifery. And so Sunday, this Sunday, May 17th, from 3 to 7 at the Women's Club, we're having a beautiful event that a lot of amazing community members are putting on, and it's going to include great music. Special guests Mom Muse are going to join us for a few songs, and then Pat Hull and Mandolin, East Wind Belly Dance, Los Cabalitos de las Canciones, and Mega Moore is going to do some hoop dance, and there'll be a silent auction and food and a bake sale and drinks and
massage
face painting, lots of families, amazing items for sale. It's just going to be, you know, a celebration of home birth midwifery and of our community and of standing up for women and families, and hopefully raise some money to help me to deal with these expenses I have accrued in my service.
Boy, and it's not very expensive. I can't say on the air, but it is really quite cheap, and so you can donate more, and hopefully people who have money will give a lot more. But don't anybody not come, because it's going to be a really fun time. Sunday, May 17th, 3 to 7 p.m. at the Chico Women's Club. So, you can show your support for midwife Dina Mose. And
also, I have a GoFundMe website,
yes,
which is linked to a charity. So those donations are actually tax deductible.
Good.
And that is GoFundMe.com/Chico Midwife, and a beautiful nonprofit called the Sentient Circle, which is a nonprofit that is part of the Birth into Being company that's also based out of Chico. Elena Tonetti is providing a nonprofit support for that, and so those donations are tax deductible.
Great. And Elena, of course, has taught all over the world about water birthing. Have you attended those, or do you attend women who have those births?
Yes.
I should say.
Yeah, we lug a birthing tub around to births, don't we, Amber?
We do. It's lighter now than it used to be, so
oh, good.
It's not so bad.
Yeah, and then you have to warm up all that water. Yeah, that's something. Well, I'm really looking forward to this fundraiser, and let's see, I wanted to ask you about 3,000 more questions, and I think what I wanted to ask you next is, we talked about this last night, but I'm not sure everybody who listens tonight was listening last night. I did more research on it, too. There's a bill in the Assembly, it's called AB 1306, and you're a big part of this bill because of your situation right now. So can you tell us about the bill?
Yeah, I will tell you about the bill. The bill is going to improve the situation for nurse midwives in the state of California in a number of different ways. The bill is inspired by myself, and there's like four other nurse midwives undergoing similar investigations currently in the state of California. And a big part, so it's going to fix some of the laws that
create barriers to our practicing in the home setting and bring us up to date. And the main one is removing the requirement for a supervising physician. There are actually only 6 states left in the United States, and I think the other 5 are like Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Nebraska, that require a physician supervisor for a certified nurse midwife. All the rest, nurse midwives are independent, autonomous providers in within their scope of practice. So that's the biggest, that will be the biggest change. And that's a change that the licensed midwives that Amber was talking about earlier, they got a bill passed 2 years ago. So the licensed non-nurse midwives are actually ahead of the nurse midwives in terms of legislation and removing barriers to independent practice.
It's strange because I know nurse practitioners can hang out their own shingle and not have supervision.
Yeah, and they have some legislation on the floor now, too. They're working on getting even more level of autonomy. Mm-hmm. Because there's a shortage of providers, and in addition, this law is going to put back a midwifery advisory council on the Board of Nursing, so that when complaints about nurse midwives are brought to the Board of Nursing, there are some midwives to advise them who know about midwife practice. Because one of my strong impressions of this experience that I have been through with my investigation is that whoever is doing these investigations really doesn't know about midwifery and what is the practice of a nurse midwife. And that's very clear in the accusations that have been made against me.
Seems so unjust. I really chafe at injustice, and I feel like that's it's really a shame if you have done something wrong or somebody can, you know, either negligence or, you know, malpractice, then yeah. But if you haven't, then to just have somebody throwing, you know, slinging things at you is just so unfair. So it's really hard. Oh, I'm not going to make you cry again tonight.
No, I'm Uh-oh. Not. No, tonight what? I'm laughing.
Okay, you're laughing. Good. Because last night Dina was with me on The Real Issue, and she cried about some of this stuff because it's so intense for her right now. So I don't want to have that happen again, because I honor your emotion.
I think when you asked how the support was from the community, I get teary-eyed when I talk about that. It's
so
been
wonderful.
So incredible,
yeah.
How Chico has just stood up with me, and how so many people, I'd say help has been coming from all directions, and people have just been coming out of the woodwork. And that's what really brings tears to my eyes, is that when I realized I was in terrible trouble with my nurse midwifery license, I felt like I was falling, and I felt like, wow, I've been this like kind of pillar in the community. I've been a midwife for so many families, and I've been like standing up for them in their hour of need. And then I thought, gosh, now I'm like falling, and what's going to happen? And the answer is Chico is holding me. Mm. They're supporting me.
Mm. I was wondering, while you were saying that, is there any way to have, you're going to say it's too late, but a mediation with these doctors? I mean, they are really becoming the bad guys here. And really, they shouldn't have to do that. They're older people. They've been in practice a long time. They've
Correct.
Delivered a lot of babies. They've done a lot of good in their careers. So, you know, can we please not, you know, have you be the bad guys? Can you not have a mediation and withdraw these charges or whatever they are?
You know, I really wished for that. And you know, I'm a real problem solver, and I have an assumption of goodwill for everybody. That's just my nature. I'm a very positive person, and which is why this is kind of ironic that all this negativity is just falling in my lap. But I have been that's part of what the Chico Birth Network did, and I'm not going to name names, but the gentleman who was the chief OB, who, when this complaint was put in, when I received notice about the complaint, I called him up and I said, "Can we please meet for coffee?" And I we met for coffee, and it was like the first time we were meeting not in the hospital, and we had a very nice coffee date, and he said, "Gosh, you know, you're a really nice person. You know, I guess I just didn't realize that, you know, you'd be so easy to talk to." And I said, "Yeah," and I asked him. I said, "I really wish you guys, if you had these concerns, that you would have talked to me about them first before putting in this complaint to the Board of Nursing, which is going to cost me a lot of money and trouble and problems." And I asked him, I said, "Why didn't you guys do that?" And he said, "Well, I guess we just didn't really think of that."
Hmm.
So just a different, yeah, I don't hold anyone as an enemy. I don't.
Right. There's no point in it, really. But I do. I said this last night. I'm going to say it again. It's competitive. There's, you know, X number of women giving birth, and you are competition. And there's a monetary part of this too. And it, sometimes that's that can be a driver too. And it's unfortunate because women need and want their options, and as you know, we three know, this is an option that we desperately want.
Well,
for women, yeah. Amber, did you want to say something?
Not in particular.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I know this must be emotional to you too, because you're like also her support now. She's going through this, so yeah. It must weigh on you also.
It does weigh on me. I feel really sad about this potential loss for the community. Feel sad not to have my mentor and teacher be able to teach me for maybe the next 3 years. Yeah, it's really emotional, and I have a lot of empathy for what Dean is going through.
Yeah, and you, how many babies do you have lined up for delivery?
I have a real full plate. I have 6 births before the end of June, and I'm not going to have to stop delivering babies right away. It's if I do end up having to do that, it will be a few months down the road. So actually, I'm not taking new clients at this time until I know, because I don't want to take a client and then, you know, not be able to see it through.
Well, maybe you can have a vacation, and it'll be really nice because you'll have had a victory and then the vacation. That would sound really good to me.
Yeah.
Because I know midwives, you know, that's one reason I never even considered midwifery, because you guys are up all night, and then you have to go another 6 hours, and I mean, it just takes so much stamina to do what you're doing.
Yeah,
it's an amazing field.
Home birth is easier than hospital birth, because if we're up all night at a birth, we don't have to go and do an 8-hour clinic and see 40 patients the next day. We get to sleep in. If we had any prenatals, we just move them to another day, and so because we set our own schedule.
That's good.
Yeah, hospital nurse midwifery is pretty, yeah, it's an intense line of work for sure.
Yeah, yeah, I couldn't do it. I know I couldn't. So we didn't really finish talking about this legislation. I want to give people an opportunity to support the legislation. Also an opportunity for people to call in if they want to. The number here at KZFR for call-in is 895-1114. We're speaking with Dina Mose, a certified nurse midwife, and also the woman who assists her, Amber Iandi Marinescu. I looked up our representative, and his name is James Gallagher, and I've got to give him a call at his Chico office. And
yes.
That number is 895-4217. If any of you want to call up and give your support to AB 1306, that's how you do it.
And Chris, also, people can call him up in the next couple days and thank him, because he voted for the bill either yesterday or today. It passed out of the Something Appropriations Committee.
Good.
So now it's been through the Business and Professions Committee.
Good.
And the Something Appropriations Committee, and now it goes to the Assembly floor. And James Gallagher, I went to his office in Chico, and we lobbied for the bill, and we went and lobbied with his aide in Sacramento, and he voted for it.
That's
so
excellent.
A really nice thing for the community to do would be to call up his office and thank him for voting yes on AB 1306.
I am so grateful. Boy, that's great. So I thought I was going to have a big fight on my hands with him, too. I've been calling about other things today.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy, that's wonderful. So, well, you know, I had all these questions, and now some of them are slipping away. But some of the issues in home birth are worth talking about, too. And the one article I read is that there's less pain at home, there's more autonomy at home, and Amber had talked about that before, and increased satisfaction. Is there other things that we want to say about home birth to kind of be promotional?
Sure. You know, some of the things I really like to tell people about are just some of the facts, really not saying, oh, it's so wonderful, oh, you'll, you know, get to be in your own bed, and oh, you get to have privacy with your partner. I really like to educate men and women on just some of the facts of home birth that they don't know. You know, I feel like the majority of people don't know that we carry medications to stop hemorrhage and bleeding. I feel like a lot of people don't know that we carry oxygen and we're trained in neonatal resuscitation and CPR. You know, these are, I think, some of the things that create so much fear around home birth that people just don't realize. They don't realize we carry IVs, we can give fluids, we can give IV antibiotics, we can, you know, do these things that they do in pretty much everything that they do in the hospital, short of, you know, ultrasounds and cesareans, and certainly wouldn't just have high-risk situations at home. We would be transporting.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, transporting is always part of our plan. We hardly ever have to transport in an emergency. It just doesn't happen that often statistically.
Mm-hmm.
We transport for things like Dina mentioned, long labor and need of some pain medication. Sometimes that's what women need.
Yeah, the woman has, she's just tired of the whole thing.
Yeah,
for sure. That can happen. One of the things that occurred in 2013 is the pediatricians came out with a statement about home birth. And has that changed your practice at all?
I'm not sure what you're speaking of.
About how the newborn has to be cared for by a certified nurse midwife. I mean, they came out with some directives about, you know, what, who needed to attend at a birth, you know, and I didn't write it all out, but
I don't think it's really affected practice, not that I know of.
Mm-hmm. But if you're busy with the woman, then your assistant is watching the baby and making sure that the baby's, you know, that the school.
We both do that.
Stay on top of that.
That's why there's two of us there, so that if both mom and baby need help,
you're on top of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And what we do is we come back to the home every couple days for the first week to assess mother and baby. And, you know, that's something that you don't get with a hospital birth once you're discharged home. I mean, in some places they have a home nurse, you know, program that goes and checks on new moms. But, you know, we come to the house, we make sure breastfeeding's going well, we weigh the baby to make sure the weight's coming up and take vital signs and educate. We do so much education with the family on, you know, normal newborn behavior and newborn care. And
so vital.
It's hard for me to imagine when people don't have home birth midwives coming every other day to check on them, how they get through that first couple weeks with a new baby.
I know. It's stressful. I can remember that. But in terms of the baby, do the moms encourage to set up a relationship with a pediatrician right away?
Yeah.
As part of it.
Prenatally. In the last month of pregnancy. There's one pediatrician in town in particular that I have a very good relationship with. He's my children's pediatrician, and he's supportive of home birth, and he trusts my assessments enough that he doesn't need the families to come in right away. They can wait a few days before making their first visit to a pediatrician office. There's great pediatricians in this town, and other pediatricians, they will want to see a homeborn baby the second or third or fourth day of life, you know, to establish the well baby care. So people can choose their pediatrician.
Yeah, good. You know, I wish we had that relationship with the obstetricians, because it just can be so seamless. I mean, it could be so, it doesn't have to be like this. So I'm just hoping that, you know, anyone listening who has connection with obstetricians will, you know, try to start, you know, working with them and addressing their concerns and trying to help them to kind of move into an age where women's choice is predominant over anything else. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's just my take. We have only a few minutes left, and I want to announce your benefit again. Let me just jump in here really quickly too, because another friend of mine is going through a lot right now. Her name is Lisa Sun, and she's been really involved with this Lyme disease. And so there's going to be a benefit I wanted to mention, since it has to do with health topics. It's called Lyme Aid, and it's an evening of music to raise awareness about Lyme disease. It's Saturday, May 16th, and Dina's benefit is the next day. It's at the 1078 Gallery in Chico, and it's from 7 to 10. And also, there's some wonderful singers and players of wonderful music. So I just wanted to get that out during this show, because I feel like I didn't do it yesterday, and I wanted to. So back to your benefit a little bit. We only have a few minutes left, and I wanted to make another plug for that. Again, that's Sunday, May 17th, 3 to 7 p.m. at the Chico Women's Club. We'll give you a chance to meet Dina, to give her a hug, and to help her with her legal proceedings right now. She just expressed the fact that she's has huge legal bills that will be very, very difficult. And give us again the, if people can't make it, what the
website?
Yeah, the GoFundMe.
Okay, so yeah. www.gofundme.com/Chico Midwife.
And I want you both to be able to have like a last statement. We have a couple minutes left. After this, the kids show comes on. And of course, I want to encourage you to stay tuned for Jump to the Light. They'll be in here in a minute. But both of you, just tell us what you think we've left out or you think is important to re-stress.
I would just like to encourage every woman or couple that is thinking about having a baby or is newly pregnant to, you know, to meet the home birth midwives in town and set up a talk and an interview with them and just get a feel for what the midwives are like and what the care is like. It's not for everyone, but I just really encourage you just to find out more information and educate yourself about your options.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Amber. Thank you for coming in tonight.
Sure. Appreciate having me.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I guess for my last words tonight, I will just give folks the website for the bill, AB 1306. And the website is midwivespass1306.com. You can also find the California Association of Nurse Midwives on Facebook. And also you can find me on Facebook. And please support the passage of this bill so that our future for home birth nurse midwives will be brighter than the present.
Oh, Dina, I just really love you. So we have a couple of minutes left, and we haven't quite sewn up this show yet, but I will just go ahead and say that It's Your Body is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by the Chico News and Review, providing Northern California with news, commentary, and entertainment. Chico News and Review is available at no charge every Thursday at over 600 locations throughout Butte, Glen, and Tehama counties. Chico News and Review can also be found at newsreview.com. And I especially hope that you'll read it this week, because an article, front page article with Dina Mose is right there for you to read about. And she says it's a good article. So that's what's, I think, what's most important here is that you have an opportunity to learn about her situation and to give. I'm hoping that they give the links for support in the article. Do they?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. So, is there anything else, Dina, that we can do to help you? We've got the legislation, we've got the financial part, we've got the giving you the hugs. What else can we do for you? Have healthy babies.
Chocolate.
Oh, chocolate. Okay, you heard it here. Okay. All right, so we're coming up on 7 o'clock. I'm going to sign off. My name is Chris, and I'm very happy to have sat in tonight for It's Your Body. And It's Your Body is on, I believe, twice a month or once a month. I'm not even sure of that. So just hang on here for a second, and I'm going to put, I'm going to try to get Cancion, the Cancion people. Oh boy, Cancion. I'm sorry, Las Capillitos de Cancion. It is Joe Chavez's last gig before she moves to New Mexico. So I want you to be able to hear their music. Here we go.
En Oaxaca se toma mezcal con café. Dicen que la hierba le cuela la mala fe. Dicen que la hierba le cuela la mala fe. A mí me gusta mole, que soledad me va a moler. A mí me gusta mole.